Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
I ask myself, why do I feel like trash this morning? Oh yes, those sticks, those mozzarella sticks I had for dinner. Two nights in a row. Did I have veggies? No, just mozzarella sticks, they were delicious. 32 a pack, but I had 15 in two sittings because I'm not a monster. How is it possible that 1.2 kilograms of breaded cheese has brought me down to my knees on a Sunday morning? But you know what? I'll eat them again because they were two for one. And they made me feel happy for a moment, then sad when they were done.
Good morning, Swim World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Tuesday, June 29th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tass? You got the Top Shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-yo!
The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friend.
And finally, making the magic happen is J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. We see you. Smash that like button. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Keep sending in your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. We'll hit the beach later this week. Email them in. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. You can tweet them in too. @NoDunksInc. That's INC. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at NoDunks.com. Immaculate items always available. Okay, fun show lined up. We got the up-down report. We're going to discuss a potential Warriors-Raptors trade. What are you doing to me, Hollinger?
Wow.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Scottie Pippen, the summer of Scottie continues. He had a lot to say on the Dan Patrick show yesterday. We'll get into that. And we'll talk about Team Canada's chances of qualifying for the Olympics. But we start with an NBA. Hey, Matisse Thybulle, I saw, is going to play for Team Australia. Maybe we'll get to that
sure
too, Lily.
Is.
Let's get to the game from last night, though. The gritty Clippers stave off elimination. Beat the Suns 116-102. Tass, LA lives to fight another day. What do you think, man?
Why do we doubt these Clippers? Is it fun? Is everybody just like picking on the Clippers? We all doubt them. We all talk about basketball. We like to find reasons for a team to make them lose, essentially, before they start playing. Excuses, injuries. Kawhi's out. Now Ivica Zubac was out before that game. It was announced that they must be heartbroken over game two. The Clippers said, screw that. We're not that team from last year. This team wasn't mentally tough enough. They gave up that 3-1 lead last year in the bubble, but they said the injuries, man, we're going to use that to our advantage. They didn't have Ivica Zubac. They didn't have a center in the lane, but they outscored the opponent in the paint 58-32 by 26 points. They had 13 more buckets in the paint than the Phoenix Suns. We're starting a center. They used their matchups to their advantages. Marcus Morris, they found him over and over and over against Devin Booker. Devin Booker and the Suns were fine giving that up. They dictated that matchup. Ty Lue saying, go at it. He had 22 points, a series high, after scoring single digits in the first four games of the series. Yeah, DeMarcus Cousins against Dario Saric as a backup center. He went back to Cousins with no Zubats. He had 15, a playoff career high.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. Cousins been around a long time. Not many playoff games, though, under his belt. But yeah, really, really strange. And then Paul George with a playoff career high, 41. He shot 75%. And part of that was there's no Zubats in the middle. So he was able to get into the lane. And the Suns really couldn't figure that out. And they all banded together. That's the point of this team. I mean, they changed their mental makeup from last season. We all judged them. We all questioned them. Again, no Kawhi, no starting center. They rebound as a team. They played ball as a team. This is a freaking team, and we like to pick on them. But they dictated this game from the get-go, and the Suns didn't really want to match up. They didn't want to dictate it themselves. So I don't know. It's fun. It's fun picking on the Clippers. That's just what we do. But they absolutely are not the same team. And they've shown it throughout this whole postseason. So I don't know where this series goes. I mean, they could definitely win another game.
Yeah. Paul George, fantastic there, TK. Scored 20 of his 41 there in the third quarter. 15 of 20 from the field. Also 13 boards, 6 assists. He had some turnovers. I mean, he's the point guard out there, really.
Had the ball a lot.
Exactly. Some were ugly, and he was getting, like, killed, I thought, by Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson in the first half. They were going at him
time and time again.
Like, where is he? But, yeah, he shut them up there in the second half, and this, I think, is his greatest game ever. I really do. He's the first ever Clipper with a 40-10-5 playoff game. And a couple weeks ago, he had a game where we were like, ooh, is that Paul George's best playoff game ever? I think this is, like, hands down, in an elimination game, putting up these numbers and what he did in the second half. But what do you think, TK?
Paul George was great, and as a longtime Paul George fan, I just love to see it out there. But I actually thought the way he played it was pretty smooth, and he kind of mentioned it in the post-game press conferences, saying, you know, Marcus Morris had it going in the first half. Marcus Morris scored 20 in the first half. Reggie Jackson had 12 in the first quarter. So Paul George was kind of able to work himself into the game. Now, sometimes with Paul George, it can feel like he's just drifting out there and he will float through an entire game. But clearly that wasn't the case. In the third quarter, he came out on fire, 20 points, another 10 in the fourth quarter. And that was what was impressive to me, was that the Clippers were ready to play from the jump ball. Monty Williams said afterwards, we showed up in the first quarter. They played with desperation. There was just somebody out there to answer every single Suns run. Marcus Morris, like I said, 13 in the first quarter. Reggie, 12 in the first quarter. Then it was Paul George and Marcus Morris in the second quarter. Paul had 8, Marcus 7, PG 20 in the third, PG 10 in the fourth, Reggie 8 in the fourth. There was just always somebody who was ready to say, we see you coming back, Suns, but not tonight. It was a gritty win for the Clippers, which, you know, 116 points, you're not necessarily thinking gritty, but they played a bunch of small guys out there, and they were the bigger, badder team. So really great stuff from Paul George. I don't know exactly where you put this on the list. It's either one or two with the game he had earlier in the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. But the guy's hitting the glass. He's getting to the rim when he needs to. And even in game four, when he really struggled from the field, I think he went 5 for 20, right? He took 18 free throws. So the jumper wasn't dropping, but he was doing other stuff to contribute for the Clippers. And that's what he said he was doing as well here, too. I can play on both sides. I can rebound. I can assist. I can play defense. But also, you need Paul George to score. In the second half, he was on fire. Playoff P, he's back, baby.
Cousins asked about Paul George there. Lee said, give this dude his flowers, man. I don't understand the slander. It's becoming quite silly now. Respect these players, man. Respect these greats. Cousins calling Paul George a great. And look, I mean, he finished top three in MVP voting once, not long ago. He is awesome. He just has moments where he disappears, like Trey said, or it feels like he's not in the game. And you can't really say that over the last stretch here, though. He's playing the best, probably, basketball of his career in terms of just, like, being consistently giving you 20. He, again, is the playmaker on this team. That's not Reggie Jackson. Rondo's not playing. He's the point guard.
Yeah.
How impressed have you been with PG here?
Oh, incredibly impressed. And I think, look, I think a part of the struggle with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard together is sometimes that line of whose team it is blurred a little bit. But now that that's not an issue, and Paul George is like, it's clear, you're the man, you're the guy on this team. You're going to be our default point guard. You're going to be our best scorer. You're going to be our clutch guy. You're going to have to go out there and deliver. And he does in those big, big moments, even though he's missed a couple of free throws, as we know. That's been a big talking point. But he hasn't let that sort of just seep into the next game. He's come back ready and firing. And that, I think, is really where why the Clippers are still alive in this series, that he's put these losses behind him. And that's why I think he generated the sort of the slander in the playoffs in the past. He's also said some silly things after games and in series as well. But now he's just letting his game do the talking. And I think it's so important that, you know, you see someone like DeMarcus Cousins who's like, why was he even on the team? And then Ty Lue throws him out there and he just bullied Šarić a couple of times there and really got, you know, got some good production out of him. And so Paul George, as you guys were saying there, that sort of first half slander almost coming from Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson was weird, because it was like, he doesn't need to dominate every single possession. If other guys have got it going, that's great for Paul George, because you know he's going to have to step up at some point in that sort of second half. Now, I thought Ty Lue, as great as he's been in these playoffs, he took a little bit of a risk at the start of that fourth quarter, leaving George out just a fraction too long. It ended up not costing them. But I also think that's Ty Lue basically saying to his team, we can't just be Paul George. Other guys have to go out there and contribute. And that to me is what it is. I mean, you've got a veteran like Rondo who's basically just out of the rotation when they're shorthanded, but he's on the sideline sort of cheering along, you know. And that to me is how Ty Lue sort of is able to communicate that message. Like, if we don't need you, we're just not going to play you, but be ready just in case. And that's what guys are sort of saying about Ty Lue, is like, he communicates so well with everybody on that team, whether you're the superstar or the end of the bench guy, and guys are sort of really pulling for him and playing for him. And his record in elimination games is incredible, 10-2 right now. So he took a gamble last night. He's like, you know what? We're going to downsize and see if the Suns can take advantage of that. And they weren't able to. And also, as again, you guys are saying there, the Clippers jumped out to the start there. 7-0 run just to get out. That showed they were really dialed in and locked in from the start. Sort of caught the Suns off guard a little bit. And even though the Suns did take a lead late, they were never really able to recover from that, because the Clippers just knew everything was on the line last night. And then their superstar delivered in that second half, particularly in the third quarter. It was so much fun to watch, because he's also bringing back the mid-range. He's just not afraid of, like, you know what, that's my shot. I'm going to get to my spot. And he was knocking them down last night. He got beaten up. Cam Johnson whacked him in the jaw. Jay Crowder poked his eye out just about there as well. And he stepped up and went 8-for-8 from the free throw line. So, you know, Paul George, I dismiss those turnovers, because sure, when you've got the ball in your hand 90% of the time like that, you're going to turn it over a couple of times. But ultimately, he didn't back away from the moment. He stepped up and led his team to victory in a fantastic performance.
Yeah, Ty Lue's getting a lot of praise here, too, Tass, as the guys have all sort of sprinkled in there, and deservedly so. Going with man, were you surprised? I mean, they went zone, too, pretty early in this game. And it's sort of like, I mean, Van Gundy did bring it up on the broadcast. It's like, where the Suns, like, weren't even ready for it or something like that. They were letting them off a hook a little bit at the start, especially. Got a little more comfortable as the game went on, because it's tough to play zone against an NBA team. They're all such great shooters. But it was a hell of a call, I thought, by Lue. And, you know, good things happen when man plays generally. So that's sort of a no-brainer after the Zubats injury. But what else did you see from Lue or what he's done throughout this entire postseason run? He's coaching his ass off.
For sure. Every button he presses works. I think they took DeAndre Ayton out of the game. I mean, DeAndre Ayton should have been more of a factor. Not a post-up guy, but he by far is the biggest player on the floor. There should have been more pick-and-roll run for mm-hmm. him to just draw fouls. Mm-hmm. He should have been able to do that. He shouldn't have 9 field goal attempts in this game. They definitely took him out of their game, and they just were hanging out on the outside. They didn't look like they had a plan for the zone. Which is strange to say with a Chris Paul-led team out there, but I think that's entirely true. I think the Clippers dictated absolutely everything. Marcus Morris is going to score over and over and over again. He's going to get Devin Booker on his back, and they're not going to put another guy on. They're not going to put Mikal Bridges or a Jay Crowder on him and throw Devin Booker out on Patrick Beverley. Like, they got out in transition, and they decided what they wanted to do, and the Suns didn't respond. And it's like the team that has the best dunk Always wins, it feels like, recently. The team that dictates pace, we're going to do it this way. Reggie Jackson had the best dunk of this game.
Yeah.
It was a jammer.
He had two dunks, but the first one was amazing. And that one caught everybody by surprise, myself included. I was like, Jesus. Yeah. Reggie with the sneaky hops there. He had another. I don't know who played better between Marcus Morris and Reggie Jackson in this one. You could convince me one or the other. I'll go, yep, because... like you said, Morris was killing Booker. Hitting tough shots, though. They were fade away baseline, then he fade away to the middle, and then Reggie was huge. Go ahead, Trey.
Well, I mean, when Marcus Morris is shooting like that, like, are you going to change your defense because Marcus Morris is beating you? Probably not. Like, that's why Devin Booker stayed there for the whole time. I didn't actually think Terrence Mann was the difference in this one. I thought it was Nick Batum. I think Mann only played like 6 minutes in the second half, and Batum was everywhere in the second half. He got 19 minutes. I think he only scored 2 points, but he was drawn 8 and away from the basket. The ball was moving a lot. He's a little bit more of a passer than Mann is, but Tass is exactly right. Ayton has to do more in this game. The guy went from a big beef, 9 offensive rebounds to 11 total. The Clippers did a great job gang rebounding. They had bodies on him almost the whole time, but... we've been talking about how great Ayton has looked in every single round of these playoffs. He's been great against the Clippers as well, and the Suns obviously look their best when he is locked in and dominating the paint, but last night that was not the case. Just like Paul George, the criticism with Ayton is that he drifts through games and can be a little soft sometimes, and that's exactly what it was last night. He just wasn't... they weren't utilizing him. I didn't think they were running enough pick and rolls to get him touches in the lane with everybody else being 5 to 6 inches shorter, but he also really wasn't demanding it. He was kind of, it felt a little bit like the Suns just showed up to take their trip to the finals, but they forgot to win the game and play hard. The exact things that have gotten them this far in the playoffs in the first place.
Yeah, toughest thing to do is close out a series. You can see why. That team is desperate. They didn't want to go anywhere, and they've come back a couple times already in the postseason in the Clips, and We keep counting them out, and they keep sort of proving everybody wrong. So, yeah, we got a game 6 here now, Lili. You thought it was over last night. A lot of people did. A lot of people thought Phoenix were going to take care of business at home. How do you see this series sort of shaking out from here, or have you just given up at this point?
Just enjoy the game.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, I sort of was angry at myself after the show yesterday because I've been like, don't write the Clippers off. They've been resilient. Right. They keep on coming back. They've been down in all three series, and they've never quit at any point, even though, you know, they've looked bad at times, but they keep on fighting. And Ty Lue's never made an excuse for the travel and the back-to-back games, or, you know, in terms of like only day off between games, and they've gone long series. They've played 4 more games, I think, than the Suns at this point, and Paul George has played more minutes than anybody in the playoffs right now. So they're not making excuses. It is so easy to write them off, but they keep on fighting. So I actually do think, sorry Clippers, but I actually do think they can extend it to 7 games now.
Oh, that's the kiss of death.
another point, Guy, we haven't really talked about, I think Patrick Beverley was also impactful again last night. You know, I mean, he's a frustrating player because that line of where you sort of go too far is often Patrick Beverley pushing it to the absolute limits, but he is really making an impact. He's getting in people's faces. Chris Paul, I mean, we saw that incident last night, which I don't think was a flagrant foul at all on Patrick Beverley. I think that was I think that was the wrong call. I think Chris Paul was trying to get the contact, and Patrick Beverley was fighting around the screen. That wasn't a flagrant, in my opinion, but he got the 3 free throws out of it.
Yeah, we had a first with that, by the way. Steve Javy disagreed.
Yeah, exactly. Javy, actually, he agreed with the Jeff Van Gundy, I think it was. Yeah. But anyway, the thing is, and I thought at different times as well throughout that game in that second half, there was times where Chris Paul, when he had Patrick Beverley, was like, all right, I don't want this guy on me, so I'm sort of going to try to find someone else here. And Patrick Beverley hit a big 3. He grabbed a lot of those rebounds early on as well. Like, he's active. So, you know, remember against the Mavericks when Luka Doncic just walked in and scored on him, and basically Ty Lue said, right, you're out of here. You're not playing anymore. And now he's out there starting and playing really well for his team. So the Clippers are not going to lie down. They are going to fight and fight and fight. And I do think we are going to get 7 games out of this one because the Clippers have shown there's some serious resilience there. Ty Lue, who knows what sort of lineup he's going to go here with games in game 6, because maybe he keeps it the same. Maybe he tries something else as well. But either way, they've been incredibly impressive. And the coaching, the playing, the way that they've fought and scrapped being down 0-2 in all three series is great stuff from the Clippers.
Part of this too was that just there was incredible shot making from the Clippers, right? I mean, you could say everything we want about Ty Lue and all that, but Marcus Morris hitting those shots, Reggie Jackson continuing to hit those shots, Paul George hitting tough shots. I mean, this would have been a quote, ugly win for the Suns if they clank some of those shots. But Paul George is stepping up and hitting, you know, missing five shots of his 20, like he shot 75%.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a special night from the Clippers side of things. So, you know, this was like they couldn't lose, really. If you're going to shoot that well, 55% on the road, it's just, that's just tough to top. You know, the Suns have to dictate it a little bit more next game. And that's how they win. But, you know, we all definitely doubted this Clippers team. And it was weird when they brought in DeMarcus Cousins and weird when they brought in Rajon Rondo. How is this thing going to work? You're bringing back the Sacramento Kings of 5 years ago. Well, I love this little second iteration of DeMarcus Cousins' career. Supporting guys. Paul George, you're the man. He was with the Warriors. Stephen Curry, you're the man. He was with the Rockets. James Harden, you're a jerk. Why are you treating this team like that, man? But he's changed. Everybody's changed, and the Clippers are a brand new team from last year. I mean, that's what we got to look at it and say. I just you got Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson, and Paul George, and DeMarcus Cousins shooting well over 50%.
Yeah,
that's some gorgeous stuff right there. It's tough to beat. They can't do that two more times. They can't shoot like that two more times. Anyways, The Suns got to bounce back.
Are we going to see Kawhi at all in this series, or is that a wrap? I mean, he's not even down on the bench. He's still up there, of course. He didn't travel with them there again. Or who knows with Kawhi? This is the thing. Like, we almost never know what the hell's going on. Trey, if you were a guessing man, do we see him at all in this series?
No. I'm literally, who knows? Kawhi Leonard is the only guy who can get away with getting zero injury updates and not sitting with his team at home in the playoffs. That's just a little bit of advice for you there in your life. You don't have to tweet about everything. You don't have to talk about everything, because you can slide through a lot of stuff if you just stay silent. Because literally any other player would be getting crushed if their team was down 3-2 in the playoffs. We don't have an update on your injury. And you're not there really supporting your team. You're there clapping from above, but it's Kawhi, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Is Chris Paul going to show up for this series, though? That's a question I think needs to be asked. Heading into game 6 here, Chris Paul is 19 of 60 in his 3 games back. Suns have lost 2 of those 3, and in their 1 win, they scored 84 points. The man is controlling things out there, as Chris Paul often does. He's slowing it down. It makes it a lot easier for the Clippers to guard them, because they're able to get into their switching defense and set things up. Cameron Payne's injury looming large a little bit right here, because I think he's been vital to the Suns the way he pushes the pace. He's been great getting 8 in the ball in pick and rolls. With Chris Paul, it can be a little bit of a dribble fest, so he needs to be better in game 6 if the Suns are going to take the victory. But now with Lee picking the Clippers, I think it's already a done deal.
Yeah, I think so too. Hey, look, this is good for the show. We said it. We want these series to go long. Otherwise, we got a big gap between the end of a conference finals ending and then the finals getting started. So this is great. I mean, I'm upset we have to hear Van Gundy and Mark Jackson on another call, one or two. I think I've decided you can't have two, like, curmudgeons, like old farts on the call. You're fine with one. But my God, when you just have both of them together, it like gets out of control, I think, personally, Lee. Like, I know we've talked, it should be Doris. It should be so many more people. And maybe it's because we're just hearing them every second night here for what feels like months at this point in the playoff. It's just like, all right, guys. Yeah. Like, the both of them, it's the two of them together. They're like a less funny version of, who are the Muppets guys? Waldorf.
If you reference it, you have to know the reference.
Yeah, Waldorf and Statler, is that it?
There you go.
Yeah. I hate it.
You really miss Doris. It really stands out so much, because she is entertaining. She's knowledgeable. She brings great energy and passion to the game. And these two it's almost like the ESPN bosses have said, try not to be such downers in the game. And they come out a bit like the Clippers last night, full of energy. And then all of a sudden it just sort of wastes away in that second half. But you have to wonder, seriously, though, if they're going to make a change. They won't, but they should, because
mid-series change, I don't think that's happening, but
no but for the finals, because it does take away from the viewing experience for me, because I'm like, a couple of times I'm like, I'm muting these guys. I love Breen's a legend, he's the goat,
of course,
you know, he's great, but it's just like, I can't listen to Mark Jackson and that, you know, talking about Reggie Miller when they were in the playoffs and said, you got to go up to him and tell him, you're the man. Someone needs to go up and tell Paul George that. It's like, okay, all right. I mean, it's just relax, man. Just calm down. So
they need, yeah, they need a night off. They need a night off.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a long...
Yeah, they've got it tough. You're right, Tass. It's very difficult to call a game 3 hours every second night. You're right.
Hey, they come do on. Their homework. Give me a break. Steve.
They're just old thirds, man. They're just, like, no, they know. Yeah, of course. They know their stuff. They know way more about basketball than all of us combined. It's the energy and enthusiasm for the game. And when it's both of them are like that, that's when it's, I think, you're actually doing a disservice to selling the league. That's
it. Of course. Of course, that's true. I think if you take every minute that they have broadcast this postseason, I think they've generally been pretty good. Jeff Van Gundy has been a pretty bright little tulip if you compare him to years past. He has been he has been happier and he has been on top of things. But yeah, he gets pissed off with in general the video reviews. I think yesterday the crappy part was there was a flop and there was all the flagrants going on, and there was plenty, and I'm sure any of us, everybody here would be a curmudgeon as well if they had to sit through many, many video reviews. I mean, we're curmudgeons the next day after video reviews during like that 30 minute. I mean, Skeets, you said, you know, Saturday night's game that was, you know, took 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you said that was, you know, a nightmare. Through it, I understand.
The problem is they're like this in midway through the first quarter. I get it when you hit like, hour four of a basketball game, but it's and they also they're like, I'm just tired of the bit where it's like one guy is taking, it's almost like they're turned into like a dumb debate show where it's like one guy's gotta say it's a flagrant and the other guy's gotta say, oh, no, absolutely not, and they literally flip like on what appears to be the exact same play. They just change it because they're like, well, somebody's gotta play the contrarian. So
I think Van Gundy went too far when they were talking about the flagrant calls, and he said, I'm tired of the sissification of the game. Sissification.
Yeah, is that a real word? Is it?
Yes, yeah. He's essentially calling it like the feminization of the game. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Are we saying that women's basketball is not tough? We're comparing the weak calls to the WNBA? I mean, he went way too far there. With those words, that was just wrong. And a lot of the time, yeah, it could be. He's got a lot of smart things to say. I think Jeff Van Gundy is pretty spot on, but he went way too far there, and it made no sense. Yeah. If you're mad about the flagrants, which you should be, the sissification is that has nothing to do with it. It's just bad officiating at times.
What'd you think of that one where Lee brought it up? You disagreed with it, but to ask that Beverly one where he got called for the flagrant, right, on the Chris Paul where he hit the deck there, despite, you know, kicking out the legs and stuff like that.
If he didn't do the little skip after, maybe he wouldn't have been called for it.
Beverly, that was pretty funny.
It was definitely not a flagrant foul, but, you know, you skipped to my Lou right after it, you might be called twice. Mm. It was a double skip, too. He was playing double Dutch. Not cool, dude.
Oh, double Dutch. I haven't skipped in a while. Trey, you still skipping?
Oh, skipping rope? Yeah, I'm like a once a week skipper at this point. Got my crossers back. Feeling pretty good about that. Working on my double unders. We'll see.
What's a double under when you do the, like,
Nice. Gotta be a little quick. Gotta be quick. The explosion in your legs is key. I'll give Jeff Van Gundy this. First of all, he gave us milk drinkers versus knife fighters. That's a pro. And also, he's got a little Tony Romo in him, but only on last second plays. He called the DeAndre Ayton valley-oop. He's like, watch Ayton rolling to the hoop, given there's 0.7 seconds left, but he's the tallest guy on the court. Nonetheless, a great call. And he also called the Devin Booker buzzer beater last night. He's like, watch out for them getting Devin Booker the ball running up here. They did basically the Bryce Drew Valparaiso play, throw it deep, hand it off. He get a pump fake, hit the jumper. He's got those down. And I love that milk drinkers versus knife fighters.
Okay. Hey, look, maybe I'm wrong. You tell us in the stream team, what are you thinking about these guys on the call? I'll say one guy, again, just to go back to him here before we wrap this up. I said it, I forget when I said it or what series. I said Marcus Morris might be the ultimate X factor left in the playoffs. And it's continues to hold true. Like, the Clippers are 8-0 in this year's playoffs when he just shoots 50% or better. So when he's hitting those tough shots, like you guys said, which he was, again, I mean, my God, just going baseline fadeaways and then into the middle. when he hits that shots at above average clip for him, I'd say at 50%, though, man, they are a tough out. And that makes sense because you're getting that secondary scorer. And he's not afraid, and they're smart. When he's got it going, they go to him. They say, this guy's streaky, man. Let's feed him. And he was awesome. But all these guys were Reggie with the plays, the clutch shots and the dunks, like we said, and Cousins doing work in his limited minutes. Big, big win. Trey, do you have a prediction for Game 6 on what, Wednesday night? I guess we run this back. What do you think, TK? Are we going 7, baby? Are we going to be playing a Zaza Pachulia clip on Thursday morning's podcast?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Why not? I don't know. I honestly have no feel for it. Do you trust Paul George at this point? Probably. He's been playing 40 minutes a game, scoring at least 20 in every single game of these playoffs. He's been great. Do you trust Chris Paul? Numerous 3-1 leads blown in his career. Oh. Possibly another one coming up here. I don't know. Maybe it's just as smart as picking against Lee. That could honestly be the smart move here, but I'm obviously rooting for a Game 7, so yeah. No clips here.
This is just the worst situation for the Suns. They just did not want to have to go to LA now and face another tricky game out there. And obviously, if they lose it, then they've got to defend home court. This is, even though they're in the box seat, they're still favored to win. They have another home game if necessary. But it's just that sort of awkward, like, oh, you maybe blew it last night. You know, you just weren't ready to play. And that's, again, apart from Chris Paul, those other guys like Ayton and Booker, everything was cruising along pretty nicely in the playoffs, and maybe they just sort of weren't quite ready and didn't understand the moment there last night and weren't set for it. So this is a very tricky situation here for Phoenix because they want to finish this off. They do not want to have a Game 7, even though it would be at home, because that could be a tough thing for them.
Anything else to add to this game, this series, guys, before we move on and eventually get to the up-down report? Speak now or forever hold your peace.
Oh, one last factor, perhaps, for the Suns. It would be nice if Mikal Bridges or Jay Crowder could hit shots. Yeah. These were guys who had really solid seasons. We thought Jay Crowder was kind of going to be a big piece for the Suns coming into their first playoff experience. He's one of the few guys, along with Chris Paul, who has been there, done that, went to the finals last year. I think he's shooting 27% from three so far in the Western Conference Finals. Bridges hasn't been much better. He's only at 33%. Those are both guys who could easily get hot in a Game 6 or a Game 7. So don't be surprised if one of them actually does.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take our first break, and then we'll get to the up-down report.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Back with No Dunks, right into the up-down report.
Preparing your tubies. It's the up-down report.
Yeah, let's see those thumbs in the stream team. Thumbs up or thumbs down. First one, according to The Athletic's John Hollinger, James Wiseman could be on the move, with the Raptors already linked as a potential deal. Per Hollinger, Golden State assured itself of an additional first-round pick when Minnesota failed to land in the top three on lottery night. The Warriors now have the 7th and the 14th picks, plus last year's second overall pick, Wiseman, and there is widespread expectation that the Warriors will use number 7 and Wiseman in particular to seek more immediate upgrades to the roster. And one name to watch, says Hollinger, Pascal Siakam. So the question is, up or down on this idea of the Raptors trading Siakam for a deal like Wiseman and the number 7 pick of the draft? Lee, what do you got?
I'm going down from the Raptors right now. Look, James Wiseman was the number 2 pick last season. He started off okay, but he ended the season basically mainly injured. He's got some potential there. He's got some talent, but it's very hard to sort of see exactly what his ceiling is in a small sample size. And if the Warriors are the ones initiating this trade and they're saying, hey, we'll give you the number 2 pick from last year, that to me tells you that that organization is like, we don't really think this guy is a number two sort of caliber pick, like that maybe he's not that good. So if you're going to give up him and potentially the number seven, and who knows who the number seven pick could be in this year's draft, for a guy like Pascal, who has been an all-NBA player, didn't have a great season last year, that would ring some alarm bells for me if I'm the Raptors. I think Pascal can bounce back. I think he's going to be better than we saw this season. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're the Raptors and if you are prepared to trade Pascal Siakam, you can get a whole lot more than that particular package, even though they would then have themselves, because they have the number four pick, they would have the number seven pick, and they would have number two from last year. So that sounds good. But I think from what we've seen so far from James Wiseman, there's more out there to be had if you're prepared to move on from Pascal Siakam. So I would say that's a no from me, doggy.
Okay. All right, doggy. Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Warriors would be like, yeah, this is great. Let's get Siakam in the mix here. Makes sense if the Raps would do it. But yeah, we're really looking at this from Toronto's side, Masai Ujiri's side, Bobby Webster's side. Tass, are you thumbs up or thumbs down on this? If again, from the Raps side of things.
So proud of the stream team here on YouTube. I'm seeing about 90% thumbs down. You gotta go thumbs down. You gotta want more for Pascal Siakam. I know his value is currently at its lowest, but he's 27 years old, and at his ceiling, he's an all-NBA player, which he proved 2 years ago. Is the seventh pick plus James Wiseman worthy of that? I don't think so. I mean, yeah, maybe the seventh pick could be good. I don't think this is about James Wiseman and his personality at all. I just think that the Warriors, if Hollinger is right, they just want to maximize Steph Curry's window here. And yeah. So they would trade whatever it took to get a Pascal Siakam. I think they would, you know, to make the money work, they would have to actually add Andrew Wiggins. It couldn't just be this deal. Mm-hmm. Or they would have to, you know, sign and trade Kelly Oubre, who the Raptors, you know, would probably move on from. But if I'm the Raps, throw in that 14 and maybe we start talking. But if I'm the Raps, I probably hang on to Pascal Siakam, because I do believe, at the same time, I understand they may want to, you know, move into the future. And if you look at James Wiseman and what he did on the floor, he's a pretty good pick and roll guy. He seems like he can work hard. And yeah, the Warriors kind of moved on from him because they were trying to win ball games and he was hurt. But I mean, he's a pretty talented guy. So, you know, if you're the Raps and you've got four and you've got seven and you've got Wiseman and you've got 14, like they should be able to squeeze from the Warriors in this situation, then maybe they're thinking, yeah, that's pretty, pretty good for Pascal Siakam, who had a bad year. But I think they should demand more. Absolutely demand some more.
Okay. What do you think, Trey?
A couple of things make this interesting to me. I definitely feel like this has got to be coming from the Warriors, because I'm old enough to remember last year at the draft when the Warriors were offering the number two pick for Wendell Carter Jr. and the number four from the Bulls. That didn't happen because it just kind of felt like the Warriors were doing what they could to upgrade their team, and that's who the trade idea is coming from. But there's a couple of things that are surprising to me, like, does DeAndre Ayton really improving and becoming a major player in this playoffs, does that increase James Wiseman's trade value? Does another team like the Raptors look at Wiseman and say, that could be our DeAndre Ayton? He's going to hold it down in the middle. He's going to have some skill offensively when we're punishing small units. I think that's a fair argument, and that's the case you're going to make if you're the team trading for Wiseman. And I also wonder, like, which is going to be a better core in the next 5 years? Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, and Fred VanVleet, or the number two pick, James Wiseman, plus number four, plus number seven?
Right.
You're kicking the can down the line a little bit here. You're not going to necessarily be a playoff team next year. I don't think it's cut and dry. I mean, clearly the Warriors would want to do this because it feels like they're at the point now where they're not going to try to blend youth with the veteran team. They want to go for the veteran team and actually try and win something while Klay and Curry and Draymond are still there. But the Raptors? I don't know. Should the Raptors go for some younger guys, or do you want them to keep kind of just being a mid-tier playoff team who maybe gets a Kawhi Leonard and goes to the championship?
It's funny with Siakam. He had somehow the worst 21-7-5 season anyone's ever had in the history of the NBA, it feels like, because people were down on him and his trade value is low. He was getting into it with Nurse, too, and the organization. Let's not forget about that. Some clear frustration. But yeah, this does not feel like enough. I guess I'm not the biggest. I like what you're saying about Ayton. Like, can you convince yourself that Wiseman might be that? I get that trade. That does make some sense. Right now, I'm not super high on him. From the Warriors side of things, this is of course you're going to do this, because they want to win a championship now with the window, with, of course, Curry and then Klay coming back, hopefully, and Draymond still there. They have the assets here in picks and Wiseman to move to get a star if they can, but there are just not that many stars available, I don't think, right now. Lillard seems far-fetched. Bradley Beal doesn't want to go anywhere, he keeps saying, so, and I don't know why Washington would want to move off him. And then Ben Simmons is just not probably good enough of a star, especially if you got Draymond there. I don't think we want two of those. We've talked about that before. So it's like, well, who's next? Can Siakam be had? They throw that out there just to maybe get conversations going with other teams, knowing do we want Wiseman and maybe the seventh pick? And maybe they're talking to other teams. I don't think the Raptors ultimately do this, though. I think with that core, like you said, Van Vliet, OG, Siakam, hopefully in a bounce back year, and then the fourth pick, whoever that ends up being, is it one of the Jalens? Is it Mobley? What do you do with Kyle? That's still a pretty, in theory, that's a pretty good little core there. I don't think that's winning a championship, but that should be a playoff team in the East. So I think they will, they'll stick with Siakam here, or at least want a better deal than this. But yeah, 90% of the stream team, you're saying thumbs down on that one, Tass? That makes sort of sense to me.
That's I was praising the stream team, but now I'm kind of thumbs down on the stream team. Oh. A lot of misinformation happening out there. Oh, no. Pascal Siakam ceiling all NBA? No way. He was an all NBA player two seasons ago. This season before they played in Florida, he was an all NBA player. That's his ceiling. I mean, that's not a bad ceiling for a young 27-year-old. He just turned 27. That's pretty good. But yeah, is he the leader of a bunch of young, solid guys like Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, a number four pick? Fair. I mean, that's a fair question. He definitely didn't prove that he could be a number one guy after Kawhi left. Mm-hmm. But it was also a very poopy year for the entire organization. Could they be one of those teams that does it by committee next season with Pascal Siakam? Sure. They could be a really good team.
Absolutely. Next one here. Scottie Pippen doubling down on his claim that Phil Jackson is a racist. During an interview with Dan Patrick on Monday, Pippen spoke openly about that Tony Kukoc play versus the Knicks in the 94 playoffs. Now, Patrick noted that Pip made it seem like Jackson was a racist in the GQ article that we talked about a couple days ago, which is an assertion Pippen said he agreed with. I mean, he doubled down on saying, yeah, absolutely, I got no problem saying that. Later, speaking on MJ's decision to step away from basketball to preserve a baseball career, Pippen called the move selfish and said it was kind of who Michael Jordan was. He said a lot in this interview. I mean, if you haven't watched the clip, it was everywhere on Twitter yesterday. Again, it was Scottie Pippen saying a lot. I'll ask it like this, Trey. Are you up or down on Pippen's, let's call it, inflammatory interview on the Dan Patrick Show?
I am up. This is how you sell bourbon. Next happy hour, I'm telling all the secrets of No Dunks. Last summer, it was the summer of The Last Dance, and to me, that didn't sit perfectly well with Scottie Pippen. So this summer feels like the summer of Scottie and his book and his bourbon, giving us his version of some of the most famous events in league history, quite honest. The Phil Jackson part is obviously the most inflammatory. It's not the first time that Phil has been accused of being a racist. You saw a lot of stuff on Twitter yesterday, people pulling up old book passages, old quotes from his playing days and his coaching days and his executive days, where Phil Jackson comes off looking like a standard old white man racist, literally old stereotypes about rap music and baggy clothes. This, though, to me is maybe the first time Scottie Pippen has said anything specifically about it, like he said to Dan Patrick. Scottie was there in the locker room, and considering some of the things that we've seen that Phil Jackson has said, Scottie has got a case, and he might very well be right about Phil Jackson. It looks like Phil is having a bit of a reckoning here, but that's also only half of the interview with Scottie Pippen here. He gives his version, like you're saying, of Michael Jordan retiring to play basketball. Also gives Scottie gives his version of Michael Jordan telling Steve Curry he's going to hit him with the pass in 1997. Pip kind of trying to make Michael Jordan look selfish. And there's no doubt MJ knows where the cameras are, but it also kind of makes Michael Jordan look like a badass that he called a game-winning assist for the gram before the gram was even invented. But really, for me, seeing this interview with Scottie Pippen, reading the GQ piece, this is the must-read book of the summer, because it's been 30 years that people have been talking about the 90s Bulls at this point. It felt like we had the be-all, end-all of it last year with an 8-part documentary, The Last Dance. Was it 10 parts?
8 parts?
10 parts? Oh my goodness. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a lot of stuff. But as Scottie Pippen has said numerous times since then, that was a Michael Jordan documentary. Yeah. Now we're getting Scottie's take, and obviously it's going to be a lot different than what we saw last year.
Yeah, Lee, what do you make of all this? Did you watch the entire clip?
No, I couldn't get through the entire clip, actually, because I was like, oh, Scotty, just sit back a little bit here. Because, look, I think the thing with the Tony Kukoc is I don't think that's a racist decision by Phil Jackson. I think that was more the jealousy that Scotty and Michael felt about Tony Kukoc, because this goes back to before Kukoc became a Bull. Remember, Jerry Krause was enamored with Tony Kukoc, and he wanted to bring him over for years, and to the point where at the Barcelona Olympics, Jordan and Pippen really wanted to make an effort to show Tony Kukoc that he wasn't welcome, basically, if he was going to come to the Bulls. And so for then Michael not to be there, and then for Phil to drop a play that Tony Kukoc would get the winning shot, and he made it, by the way, I think Scotty is using sort of racism to hide behind the fact that he pouted and got shown up because Kukoc hit the game winner. So that, to me, in that particular instance, I don't think was racially motivated by Phil Jackson. Some of those other things, and LeBron has mentioned about, you know, when Phil said about the posse and stuff like that, certainly that stuff has old man sort of vibe to it. But in this one in particular, I think actually he looked kind of bad, because it was kind of like he pouted. He was being selfish by not being out there on the court for his team in a crucial playoff game. And then the fact that Tony made the shot, he's kind of like doubling down by just saying, well, he was racist for doing it. Instead, he could have said, yeah, okay, it was a great play call. We won the game. But he didn't do that. But I also do think that documentary last year, a lot of people, because Michael was the one who had the final say in it, would have changed things about how it was perceived and how it was presented. And Scotty, being, you know, Michael's greatest teammate, probably wanted a bigger say and wanted to have more influence, but he didn't. So he's a little bit bitter and a little bit jealous of that. And he's like, listen, I've got some things to say too. Give me some bourbon and cigars and we'll have a great time. So, you know, it's funny though, Scotty, yeah, he seems to be, you know, he's taking a few shots right now. And you know what? Maybe that works for him. Go for it, Scotty. Keep going, man. Yeah, you got some stuff to sell.
He was really leaning into the third person, Scotty Pippen, in that interview with Dan Patrick there. Tass, what'd you make of the clip?
Well, as far as the Tony Kukoc play, I think he was drawing up a good shot. But, you know, I don't think it was racially motivated. But at the same time, everyone defending Phil Jackson for having black players on his team, and that alleviates him from being a racist. I don't think so. You know, it's the classic. I've got a black friend. Look at me. I'm not racist. It just doesn't make sense. One doesn't equal the other. So I'm happy Scottie Pippen is coming out and voicing his point of view, and hopefully, it may not come off perfectly well thought out in an interview with Dan Patrick, but in a book, I assume it would be a little bit more thorough, a little bit more, you know, exactly the way it was, a little bit more actually descriptive of what happened in that locker room and the way things were. And Michael Jordan, he did have the last say in The Last Dance. That's definitely how it seemed like. And mm-hmm. we all sit back and think, you know, as this, you know, very good documentary that was put before us, we all look at it and say, well, Michael Jordan is the goddamn man. Yes, he absolutely is. There obviously is another side to everything. And so Scotty is coming out and voicing his opinion. So I'm happy about that. And I think the book should be more than, you know, these snippets. You know, maybe the racial comment about him, about Phil Jackson. Yeah, designing a play for Tony Kukoc didn't come out, you know, all that perfectly and all that well. But, you know, maybe the book will be a little bit more well-placed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. When's the book even come out?
I mean, not until November, I think it is. Okay.
A while. But he's got the bourbon right now.
Yeah. And the cigars.
He's got cigars too?
Well, actually, sorry, I don't know if he's selling them, but he had the bourbon and the cigar there.
Well, they go hand in hand. Like, geez,
yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you say maybe he's trying to angle for a cigar contract or something.
Maybe,
as well.
Maybe. All right. Yeah, if you haven't seen this interview, go check it out if you want to. Final one here. The FIBA Olympic qualifying tournament in Victoria, BC begins today. I actually think it's underway right this second here. The Canadian senior men's national team, they're hosting the 6-team tournament in which only the champion qualifies for a spot in the upcoming Olympic Games in Tokyo. Throw it up here for the stream team, JD. 12-man group for Team Canada, 10 players with NBA experience, 8 active NBA players, including Andrew Wiggins, RJ Barrett, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Dwight Powell, Corey Joseph, Trey Lyles, Dort, and a few others there. Missing some big names, no doubt, because of injuries, contract situations. There's no SGA, there's no Dylan Brooks, there's no Kelly Olynyk and all this. Anyway, Canada faces Greece tonight, China on Wednesday, and then Uruguay, Czech Republic, and Turkey are in Group B. You gotta win this thing, Tass, to punch your ticket. Are you up or down on Canada's chances of qualifying for the Olympics in this 6-team tournament?
Do you see those guys? Did you hear the names that were just mentioned? Plus the guys who aren't on the team? This team is stacked.
It's a pretty good team. Not bad. Yeah,
come on. Pretty good. This team is really good. Without Jamal Murray and Dylan Brooks and SGA, that they can put out this team. If you look across the world in all these tournaments, there's actually 4 tournaments happening right now.
Yep.
And the winner of each of those tournaments gets a spot in the Olympics. So this one is happening in Canada. They got home court advantage. And the teams that they're playing, they should have a huge advantage over, including my homeland, my parents' homeland of Greece. They've only got one Antetokounmpo brother out there, and it's unfortunately not the best of the three. It's Kostas Antetokounmpo who's playing. He's got a ring, doesn't he?
NBA champion. He
does. And we'll see him out. Hopefully he gets some play time. I'm interested to watch him play basketball because it doesn't happen very often. But he's the lone NBA representative there for the Greek team. You've got China, no NBA representatives. I don't know if Yi Jianlian is still playing, but he'll be there, I guess. You got Uruguay, Czech, no NBA representatives, Czech Republic, Tomas Satoransky, and then Turkey with some oldies, you know, Ersan Ulus, Ilyasova, and then a couple guys like Furkan Korkmaz and Chetty Osman. But the Canadian team is freaking stacked with Dort and Barrett and Michael Mulder solving things. So, you know, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Andrew Wade. I mean, that team is just too good. How could they should not lose with home court advantage. Absolutely not.
Oh, boy. Nick Nurse, coach of Canada's team, for those that don't know. You say all this, Tass, but the Canadian men's national team has gone through some heartbreak before, even at times maybe when they should have won some games. Though it wasn't on in their homeland, they do have the benefit of playing here in Victoria. You get rid of like crazy travel times, you know, flying across the world. That's happened before. You know, some home cooking when it comes to FIBA officials. By the way, if you think NBA refereeing is bad, tune into a couple FIBA games and make you respect the NBA officials a hell of a lot more. This stuff can get wild. That's all I'll say. But Lili and Trey, you guys probably don't even care about this question, if we're being honest.
Yeah,
but
what is qualifying for the Olympics?
Yeah. You got it easy.
You have to do that? Like, you have to play in a tournament and win that tournament to get into the next one? They don't just let you in because of the gold medals?
Well, I guess they do let you in when you win a gold medal, I think, is the case. Or when you win a world championship or something like that. Yeah, you don't have this problem with your team. Lee, I don't think you have this problem because you're in some area where there's like 3 teams. You, New Zealand, some other team. I don't even know. The Cook Islands or something you guys call it.
Yeah, I think we finished 4-3 times at the Olympics. We're angling just for a medal. We want a medal. We deserve one. We should have had one. So, you know, that's the biggest thing for Australia is medaling. Now, our women, they've silver medaled at the Olympics a couple of times. They've won the world championships.
Canadian women's team already, you know, punched their ticket to the Olympics a long time ago. They're ranked 4th in the world, the women national team in Canada. They won a medal too, like your boomers. Wait, what do you call the...
They're called the...
Boomerettes? No.
No, they're called...
You don't know?
God, I can't think of it right now.
I can't even say Homer to you.
Some Homer.
Yeah. But listen, that Canadian men's team strutting around with 2 number 1 overall picks in the NBA draft, that's pretty impressive. Not too many other countries can say that. So, to be honest.
Yeah, one of yours won't even play for your team.
Yeah, I know.
2 of them. Good, Kyrie's in the United States.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
But where's Bennett even been? I didn't even know he was still playing. Like, he hasn't, you know, we wonder what he's doing these days. But, yeah, look, if you look at the Canadian team without injuries, then, yeah, they should be seriously contending for a medal, you know. But right now, they're a bit shorthanded. So, you know, it's probably going to be tough for them if they do even get out of this round to medal. But, yeah, good luck. Good luck. I'd like to see Australia versus Canada in the Olympics. Wouldn't that be awesome?
That'd be nice, yeah. Look, Canada has barely ever qualified for the Olympics here, guys, the men's team.
Yeah.
2000 happened, Nash playing. And, I mean, I want to go, like, I think it's 88 or something. I mean, it almost never happened. So, you know, with all this talent that has
come up
in this country.
They made 2000. They made the year 2000.
That's what I just said.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said 88. What was that?
Well, they also made it in 88.
Oh.
Going way, way back. I believe they did. Yeah, they should have a good, you know, national team because we have a lot of NBA players. So if they can get all of these guys to start committing, like Andrew Wiggins coming back is honestly sort of a big deal. He had a falling out with the program, and you know, there's new, you know, Rowan Barrett now in charge there, and he's back in the mix. I hope to God they win this thing and actually just play in the Olympics. They wouldn't medal. They wouldn't come close, I don't think. But that would be a big step for this program, Tess, to win this. And look, there's going to be like 10% capacity in these arenas. Like, it's not going to be a full house. It's going to be really quite barren. But better than, again, like I said, traveling to the other side of the world and having like 3 days to get ready and all that. We'll see here as it tips today.
Yeah, excited for Wiggins. I think Golden State has changed him, has made him a different type of player. He's got a different type of confidence. And I think that shows in his decision to play for the national team again. That wasn't the case for a long time. And on the other side of the world, in Lithuania, you got Luka Doncic trying as well to qualify with his Slovenian team for the Olympics as well. So, yeah, there's something to keep an eye on there. It'd be nice to have Luka in the Olympics as well.
Yeah. Go Canada, Greece, though. So who are you cheering for then tonight, Tass? I mean, who do you go?
I'm just going to enjoy the basketball game.
Lose.
Because
because
they both, basically, this is, there's six teams here. The two worst teams get knocked out, and then there's a four-team semifinal this weekend. That's when I'll start really cheering. I'm just going to enjoy some hoopty-hoops before the other hoopty-hoop game starts here at the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah,
is Canada the favorite for this tournament?
They
actually assume
are.
So. They got a lot of NBA players and home court advantage.
Yeah, they are. Like, if you look at the Vegas odds. But, like, Czech Republic always are a sneaky good team. Turkey, like, with all their old guys, like, it's that. I mean, we know this. Even, like, Team America has run into teams where it's like, well, these guys have just played together for, like, 20 years. Like, they're pretty damn good, even though they don't have maybe the individual talent. Nick Nurse is the head coach, and with some of the talent Canadian player, or NBA players on this squad, they should win this thing, especially being at home. So I'll obviously be rooting for them.
Trey, you might be cheering for Turkey in this tournament because they've got a guy who apparently is on the Miami Heat roster, like currently a member of the Miami Heat. His name is Omer Yurt7. I know you like yurts.
Oh, yurt, and I think there's a Trey on Canada's team, right?
Yeah,
I don't know who Lyles. I'm pulling for in Turkey. Oh, they got two Treys.
Two.
Trey Lyles and Trey Bell Hines, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
the game I'm tuning in for, Turkey versus Canada. Three Treys on the court, two Treys and a yurt, if you will.
Hopefully that's the game to decide who goes to Tokyo, because you got to win this tournament to get there. Okay, that's enough Team Canada talk, but maybe we'll be sprinkling it in throughout this FIBA Olympic qualifying tournament.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominant Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Okay, JD, time for Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, Tweet of the Night. I love it. Tuesdays. It's all I got to Tweet of the Night every Tuesday. I love firing it up my my Twitter feed there and scrolling down and just agonizing, really, about what tweet I'm going to use. And, well, this one caught my eye, and there's a reason, but this is from Bald Brian, Brian Bishop of the Adam Carolla Show. He's the sound effects guy, the guy we stole the drops idea from. Anyway, his tweet says, the next one's going to have to be called The Fast and the Fur 10 Us, isn't it? For like the Furious, but 10 in the word furious. So why did this catch my eye? Well, I realized that there are 10 Fast and Furious movies already, including Hobbs and Shaw. And now I don't know if we've actually mentioned this on the air because real life and the show blurs for me. I never know what's been mentioned to our audience and to us internally, but the off-season's coming up and we're planning a Fast and Furious binge of sorts with Trey and Skeets, because Skeets, you have not seen a single Fast and Furious movie.
Not a single. I've never even caught like 5 minutes on television. Never. Wow. I mean, of course I know of them. I have an idea of what some of them are even called, some of the big actors in them and actresses, but never seen a single second of them. So yeah, it's time I watch these things and Trey's the master. So it just makes sense for a newbie to then watch with the pro there in TK.
Yeah, and so very excited about that. So the audience, the stream team, and the people listening on the pods, over the off season, you are going to be delighted to follow along. And if you've never seen them, start watching them because it's gonna be fun. I'm going to watch them too because I got to do these dumb shows. So I'll come with my hot takes and some thoughts. Why not? Right. So, looking forward to that. So just look coming soon to a feed near you.
Yeah.
Nice one.
So we're trying to come up with a name for the podcast.
Right.
And so if you have a suggestion, you know, tweet them in at No Dunks Inc. Let us know in the stream team right now. Let us know in the YouTube comments. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Right now we're thinking of going with, let's just throw it out there, see what the reaction is. We're thinking of going Fast and Furious and Us. You know, keep it simple.
I think that's great.
Yeah. Right? And we want people searching for Fast and Furious as the first part of it. Fast and Furious and Us. The old ampersand sign there a couple times.
It kind of implies that we're neither Fast nor Furious, right?
True.
Because it's the Fast and the Furious and, well, Us.
Well, I don't know. I might be Temper Boy on these podcasts. Cool. I might be Furious. I'm pretty fast, too. Jesus. I don't know. We might need a name. We also had a Too Fast, Too Curious. That's pretty good. It feels like we said that in the Slack channel. I'm like, this must already be a podcast name. Somebody's already done this, right?
Yeah.
That's got to be one. But I don't know. I didn't check.
Yeah, there's a surprising lack of Fast and Furious specific podcast.
Wow.
I would imagine that every movie has been casted at some point.
Sure.
But for linking them all together, we're going to be in our own lane.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, we're coming up now with we've had some good brainstorming sessions of like categories, like some simple ones of like the best quote and like the WTF scene from that movie. I think what we got to do at the end of everyone too, Trey, I thought about this after we were talking, like we got to rank them like as we watch them, like you know, okay. where does that one stay?
Yeah, sure.
Like, is number one the best? Does that always continue? And we'll do that. And then we got a bunch of other funny ideas too. Might even get our wives involved in this thing. So,
wow.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Well, JD, you're going to be instrumental because you're the only one who knows anything about cars. So,
barely.
That's going to be key there.
Okay.
Nas Dunks. That's a pretty good
that's
one.
Pretty good. That is pretty good.
That's funny. That's funny.
That's not bad. Yeah, keep them coming, guys. We're open to all your suggestions. Right now, it's Fast and Furious and Us. And, yeah, we're going to be kicking this off, what, in July? Or is that, no, August, maybe August.
Yeah, probably August. Yeah, okay. August and September. The off season, you know.
And are we watching them in the order of release, right, Trey?
We're going to watch them in release order because the chronological timeline order can get a little wacky, as you're going to learn once we get into the series. And I haven't mentioned it. It does feel like we're going to have to do Hobbs and Shaw, as this is going to be the next franchise that spins off from Fast and Furious. But there's also a Vin Diesel short that's set in between some of the movies called Los Bandoleros, where he's literally explaining what has happened off camera. What's happened like in the Fast and Furious-iverse, whatever you want to call it.
Wow.
I don't know if we're going that sicko deep to watch Los Bandoleros, but we'll have to debate it.
All right. Well, hopefully this goes well. We do our binge watch. We do all our episodes. Because then if it goes well, JD, I want to then go back and do an episode on every episode of Bar Rescue.
Cool.
With John Taffer. That actually does exist. That podcast already exists.
But, really?
Yeah, we can add our own little spin to
it. It's got to be the most redundant show of all time.
I know. But there are some funny-ass moments in Bar Rescue.
God, like, I love that show.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that one, too. Okay, so Fast and Furious and Us coming to you later this summer. Good tweet. Okay, tonight we got one game quickly here. Yesterday, Trey Young had an MRI on his ankle. He's been diagnosed with a bone bruise in his right foot, listed as questionable for tonight's Game 4 task. So he's the storyline heading into this one down at the Fortress here. But anything else you'll have your eye on in this huge Game 4 for Atlanta? I mean, I don't think you want to fall behind 3-1, but what do you got?
Well, I'm very, very concerned about Trae Young because I think he's tough as nails. From the outside watching in, I don't think that he would have this, like, keep him out of this bone bruise, but he did put on Instagram after he got back the MRI info, so frustrating with two sad faces. Now, I think there's no cryptic information here. I think he's just on the nose here. He's pissed. Thanks for Chris Kirshner for sharing that, because I think he's upset, and I think you guys might not see a great Trae Young. I think Trae Young, you guys, as it Skeets and JD, you guys are going down. Yeah. I'm concerned about you guys. JD joining in on the fun.
Yeah.
Because if Trae, you know, as much as he's been ridiculed for not having great fourth quarters, he's hit two fourth quarter shots in this series. One of them he didn't play in because it was a blowout. The thing is, they don't have him. They're done. If they have a 50% Trae Young, they're done. He has been so instrumental. It's the number one player on the team, and then everybody is way behind in the number 2, 3, 4 spots, especially with Bogdanovich not being himself. I'm worried. I'm definitely worried. I'm reading into an Instagram story, but I'm reading into it, especially the way he was, you know, he didn't want to handle the ball a lot in that fourth quarter after stepping on the referee's foot. So I'm quite concerned.
This is what he's doing to you, Tass. Don't you see it? I mean, if the playoffs are a stage, Trae Young has been the lead actor for the entire postseason. And he's just building the drama.
Is this a Fast and Furious podcast?
No, he's just building the drama. He's got you suckered, man. He's playing this up. We're going to get the best Trae Young game of his life here tonight. Because he has you doubting. He's got so frustrated, a couple emojis, the black screen there on his Snapchat or where the hell that was, TikTok, I don't know. He's just setting us all up for what's going to be special. I mean, you really should get your standing room ticket only here and come on down, Lee. I'm heading down tonight. We'll see. You're right. We need a, you got to hope for a, I don't know, even a 70, 75% Trae Young, or I don't like the chances of the Hawks. We're going to show it again. It's that amazing of a screen share. But yeah, what are you watching, TK? Okay, outside of Trae Young, is there anything else you got your eye on?
Well, I hope you're right, Skeets. I hope he's pulling a rope-a-dope here so he can be like Vin Diesel 30 minutes into the first Fast and Furious movie. You thought you had me? never had your ankle injury because it looked bad and he really didn't do it. I know.
What am I getting myself into?
Yeah. There's not a lot of basketball talk in the first Fast and Furious. For the remainder of the series, it really picks up.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the Hawks had a lead going into the fourth quarter, and then Trae Young, all he was able to do was stand in the corner. So if he's not really able to go tonight, if he doesn't have that Nas kicking in, then it's going to be over quickly. Let's, though, assume that Trae Young is sandbagging here, and even though he's frustrated, he's going to be fine. Somebody else still has to step up and take a little of that scoring and creating lead off of Trae Young's shoulders to give the Hawks a chance here, because, like, Danilo Gallinari, he was all right in game three. You know, he scored 18 points, and if he shoots 50%, that all looks good, but those 50% that he misses, the possessions are still the exact same. Just pounding the ball. Maybe he makes the fadeaway, maybe he doesn't. Game seven, Kevin, he's got to do a little bit out there because Bogdanovich, he's not at 100%. We don't think Trae Young probably will be, so Kevin Huerter seems to be the guy on the perimeter who can move the most for the Hawks right now. Hasn't had a great series so far, but we've seen in the past that he can heat up. If he's able to get hot from mid-range, if he's able to make a couple of plays off the dribble, that would be huge for the Hawks, keeping it close.
Lele, anything to add?
Real chance here for the Bucks to squeeze the Hawks, and will Budenholzer be able to do that? Just pound Giannis inside, because there's no real way to stop him. And even though Middleton was the big difference in the fourth quarter of Game 3, Giannis can get it to the point where they don't need a heroic performance like that, because if he does dominate and take over inside, it really doesn't matter about Trae or Kevin Huerta or Boogie anyway, because Giannis has been and has shown that when he gets inside, he can absolutely just destroy the Hawks. So will Budenholzer take that chance tonight to give themselves a chance to close out this series at home, which would be huge for Milwaukee to get a little bit of rest, because they'll be on the road if they face the Suns. Actually, I'm not sure about the Clippers' record, but I think it's important for the Bucks just to close this one out as soon as they can, if possible.
And if you're going down to the Fortress tonight, we're not counting out loud quickly when Giannis is at the line. No, get your iPhone, open the app, the old timer app there, and set it for 10 seconds. Make sure your volume's up really loud. We'll all click it at the same time as soon as he gets the ball, and then I want the whole arena's little alarms to go off. See if that works any better. Though we went 6 of 13, so I guess your counting did pretty good. You guys speeding them up there a little bit. All right, should be fun. JD, can't wait to see you down at the Fortress. What made you decide tonight was the night of all nights?
The tickets went below $100 for once, so
it
was suddenly affordable. Unfortunately, probably because Trae got injured. But
yeah,
I have one NBA jersey, and it's a Chris Middleton jersey. I'm kind of tempted to wear it.
Is it a Chris Middleton Pistons jersey, though? That would be perfect, JD.
Nah, it's a Bucks jersey. Wow.
That's awesome. JD will be the only guy counting slower than 10 seconds. One, two.
I usually wear, you know, I usually go see Raptors games there, so I'm used to rooting against the Hawks, but I can't do it. It's the playoffs, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
and you want the series to go long. You want to see them tie it up, make it a best of three.
Exactly.
Just wear. I don't know if they're wearing red again tonight. I don't know if they're wearing maybe their MLK jerseys tonight. I'm not sure. Ooh. I didn't check. So we'll talk off podcast, Judy, coordinate what we're wearing tonight. Okay, guys, we'll call it there. Later this afternoon, though, Trae and I are going to have a new Top Shot Hot Boys. If you want to come join us, rip some packs. We'll give away some Mohs later this afternoon, probably about 4:15, 4:30. Just make sure you subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube so you know when we're going live with that one. Keep your questions coming for the Beach Steppin' Podcast, nodunks@theathletic.com. Keep your podcast name suggestions coming for our Fast and Furious and Us Right Now series that we'll be doing later this summer. You can email those in, tweet them in, all that stuff. Thank you so much for joining us today. Back tomorrow, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, for the Hawks to win tonight, they're going to need a Trae Young performance. Like he's a Fast and Furious Tyrese Maxey or a Vin Baker Diesel or a Jordana Corey Brewster out there.
Brace the day, people.
You could stay. So long, but you're the one I've waited for.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.